Welcome to Miracle Nutrition with Hardy White. I'm Hardy White. Join me now, won't you? As we visit together, as we pray together, in all senses of the word, except our prey isn't tiny little animals, it's the truth. The Prayer by Hardy White. Lord, this is Hardy White. I'm praying to you. We have spoken before when... Oh, all right, I'll hold. Oh, hey, yes, this is Hardy White, and I was thinking that, yes, it does sound like a Shelley Berman bit, but I'm praying, and I was just thinking about the times that we had spoken before, and I remember asking you when I was very young, why is my grandfather dead? Why is my grandfather dead? And you said something I'll never forget. You said, and that really stuck with me. I thought, oh my goodness, nothing. That's really something to think about, because that's the most profound answer you can possibly give. And then you started giving it to sort of all of my questions. And I thought, well, come on now. Is this some sort of trick? Is this some kind of rhetorical device, this lack of rhetoric? And so I really started to, you know, doubt whether you're really there or not, you know, because I'm pleading. But I thought, oh my goodness, what a, there's no better way really to keep the heart pleading than to ignore it. And so I shout out now and I answer my own questions, which is a really brilliant thing. And I think maybe all customer service should be that. You call up and there's just silence. And you start saying things, and then you hear your own words, and you go, I think I knew all this all along, but it's just good to hear it out loud. And the frustration of my voice when I'm not getting answers to my questions. And I don't know that I've even thought about them, but here I am praying in a state of profound pleading. And I love, those are my favorite parts of the Bible. Are the whiniest ones. Say, Lord, what are you? Where are you? What are you doing? Come on now. I did this thing that I thought you had asked me to do. That's an interesting proposition too. My goodness, what if you hadn't asked me to do it? I've gotten it all wrong. So yeah, you misunderstood, you're saying. I didn't want to do the voice. I almost did the voice. I know that you probably don't have a proper voice. Or you may. I don't know how things work. I guess if I was a spirit, I could speak through anything and in any way. And I think it would be, I would speak like, maybe like Joe Penner, and then through some kind of crazy child's toy. Maybe even one that doesn't have a face. And that way, maybe I would command attention, and I could tell people what I expect of them. But language is so evasive. What if I had a kingdom like that even? What if I were a king? I think about that a lot. Gosh, I'd feel more powerful if I were a king. Right now, I feel so powerless. A lot of it's because I don't have any pants on. I didn't have any clean. So I'm sort of dressed like a a king in that I'm a robe, but it's not so much a kingly robe as the robe of ancient Bath, I call it. And I look a sight, my goodness. I might even smell differently. But, you know, I know that, my goodness, I still, it's my pleading thing. What if I were a king? Now, how would I get my subjects to do what I wanted them to do? And why would I want them to do what I want them to do? Well, some things, for instance, I just as much make myself a sandwich, but I don't know where the stuff is. So I'd need at least the subjects to show me where things are and preferably do them for me. And I don't know, that could, now take that to any level you want. I'd be very, not very demanding as a king, I don't think. And maybe you aren't. But there's some things I would just expect, you know, don't throw acid at me or something, because I'm the king. And I got to stay looking clean in case I got to do an opening for one of your stores or something. Come on. I know that I'm also a symbol. King, people use the king symbol. Here I am. I've anointed myself a king. But it's fun to think about. And I would have my own kind of hat. And people would use me as a symbol for things. Like King Mattress King and everything like that. Isn't that fun? Say, look, if it was royalty selling me one of these mattresses on all four corners of a city block, I would feel special. So do you know what the fellow that sold me the mattress is? What? He's a king. He's the Mattress King. And he has a little crown on and everything. But there's kings of all sorts of things, of everything from butter to hamburgers or all, everything. And there's also pigs that do the same thing, stand next to signs selling pig, which is, boy, that takes some guts right there. I've never seen, I suppose there's some king, now I'm king of regicide something. I don't know, that'd be interesting. King of the Russian Revolution. Well, I guess just another king. We just switch out kings a lot. And it's a funny word, first of all, if you're high, even if you're not. And, you know, I think it's in different languages, they have different words for it. A fun one is which is the French one. And it's really onomatopoeia. Because they'd say, what is that? Who's that fat fella that looks like his cousin's uncle's mom? And you say, oh, that's blah, 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 or whatever. And that means king. Now, depictions of kings in fiction, why am I saying this in a prayer? It's really a preference, Lord. A lot of times when I'm praying for something, I don't mean to, you know, be overly verbose, but even traditional prayers have that, you know. I want to do some praising, I want to do some explaining, and I want to do some asking, and I'm going to get to that. And I will get to the praising, too. I'm praising right now because I just think it's a wonderful thing to have you, Lord, that's a king that's not there or whatever it is. It's one of pure energy or not, or everything. Just love that. Or nothing. Just the idea of nothing. Looks good in a hat. Right? The idea of nothing at least can't steal from the state coffers. They had a thing going with the national health. Nothingness did. Really? Mm-hmm. I don't believe that at all. But if I were a king, and I had my hat on, everybody knew it, and I had my staff, and perhaps I had an orb. I don't know I'd be doing. That's so burdensome. I wish one of them was like a fidget spinner or something. The orb, at least, you could do stuff with it. Even the staff, who knows? And people come to me, and I'd have them do things, I suppose. And when I wasn't opening businesses, or I don't know what the modern kings do, bless them, they got so wonderful arrogance to be able to pull that off. Say, I'm the king. Really? Yes.
And my child is special.
I bet.
Yes. And we're all the king people.
I bet you are.
Uh-huh.
I do the same voice for my dog that's very dumb. And I imagine that I could see it being the head of something. There's not a lot of connection in human history between those who rule and those who drool. They are often the same. And we've heard about the Habsburgs and everything like that. And that's a literal example. But most who crave power are, as you know, Lord, sort of just wannabes, aren't they? Aren't they trying to be, isn't it silly, like a monkey in a hat? Look at that monkey trying to be a people. It isn't. Or a dog. Look at the dog. Boy, back in the 19th century, or maybe it was the beginning of the 20th century, dogs would smoke pipes and have hats and everything and go to work right alongside of 8-year-olds, like going to the coal mine or going printing presses or running an insurance company. This is back in when things were gritty in like New York City. But the dogs would have, monkeys would have jobs and everything like that, wear little hats, newsboy hats. And say, the monkeys wouldn't say, they'd go, eek, 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 eek. But they'd say, monkey, I want you to do a job for me. And they do stuff. They do delivery. They do light sales a lot of times. There were so many different types of animals working in the garment district back in the 20s, the teams. There's something called the shmata monkey, which is a really fun type of primate. And I don't know if we have a lot of those things anymore now. Everything's in zoos, but they used to be able to get jobs and everything. You know that. Insects used to have work, used to do things in factories. And we know that from Charlotte's Web and all. That's a rural one, but there's urban versions where the spiders are running things. I mean, you're not going to let a creature that's got 8 legs, you're going to say, I can think of 8 levers that do different things. You can be working. And all that weaving, we could use those for very intricate, like a tea cozy or anything. You could be making and creating. Well, put them all to work. No idle hands or whatever you use, phalanges or any, I don't know, whatever's sticking out of you that you use to manipulate space and your environment. Put them to use. Oh, Lord, I plead. I feel just so helpless in the universe a lot of times, and I depend on others. And yet I look in the faces of others, and I see the twisted visages of demons. And I think, oh, my goodness, I wonder what's going on there. And I think, you know, it could be sciatica. So many people suffer silently from a bulged disc poking on a nerve. Now, this could also be a metaphor for certain social conditions. What are they? Let's talk about labor. No, I'm kidding, Lord. Sometimes I like to veer off, you know, as my heart starts speaking to me. I come from that tradition where I let the words pour out of me in praise. I feel so humble before this universe. Mostly, I say humble because I'm terrified. Oh, I'm terrified. I can't control things. I thought I was controlling it with my mind and my social media opinions and my vote. And I thought, I'm controlling the world. And it turns out I'm not. Oh, my goodness. And that feeling of being a non-player character is back again. But I also like it. I do not want to be the main character in this story, because I think the story's cursed. So I certainly don't want to be mentioned, you know? And the crowd of peasants ran away. That's me. So everybody else get mentioned. Beautiful. Love you. Etched in time forever. On a canvas writ. On some unknown non-substance that is the fabric of the universe, which isn't fabric at all. Isn't that something. There's nothing more Emperor's New Clothes than a fabric that isn't fabric. Really, tell me more about this. We're going to be, it's made of string theory. This suit of clothes? I'd love something like that. I have it right now. I'm wearing it. When I'm naked, I imagine I'm wearing all sorts of suits of clothes made from various nonsensical things, concepts. And then it's beautiful. I walk around and I feel a dignity that I don't have when I'm naked. So I say nude or naked, and people get kind of titillated because they think of that they don't. Well, they're thinking of me, not necessarily, but it's really human beings in the wrong context. It's terrifying. I'm talking about hospital naked like that. You go, that's like the pits of hell naked, exactly. Like Bosch painting, naked. Nothing erotic, just vulnerable. And flawed. And that's a wonderful thing. And embrace that. Let's embrace that. Oh, I will take my mind to all the places. I say, oh Lord, if you are everything, there is naught but God. That's what I'm thinking. I read just such little Spinoza. Really just the wiki entry. And I'm thinking, okay, well, that makes sense. So, you know, what couldn't be the God? You know, that isn't pantheism, really. It's just acknowledging there would be nothing outside of you, right? Right. I'm sorry I did the voice. That's so silly. I should be able to just speak to silence and know somebody's there, like when they talked in the TV show Severance, when they talked to the board. You know, one time you heard, yeah, I'm here. I'd love to hear that from you sometime. Lord, I'm here. Go on. Some people have said they have heard that once, and that keeps them going. You know, you just, all right. It doesn't have to be long or anything like that. Just any kind of acknowledgement. And the wonderful, you know what would work wonderful? Say, oh, Lord, are you there? If you just... brand new bike or something. I don't even want a new bike anymore, but that one goes way back. But you know what I mean. A pony, not a pony. But if you manifest something out of nothing, oh, that'd be delightful. I'd sooner think you're an alien then. Because I don't know if that the creator God would do something, so that seems very small and then just making something poof, pop out of nothing. I would think the God I know would say, all right, well, you know what, blanks? There's nothing wrong with a little space. In the 1970s, people got so cynical, they ended up making room for creativity. There was a product called the Nothing Book. And you could go into your local Spencer's or something like that. And they had this book, say, the dust jacket said, The Nothing Book. And it looked just like some book you'd buy that was written by somebody who would be writing down things like a story or something about their lives or whatever, family and everything like that. And one of them has got problems and they all are desperate. It'd be like Faulkner, but there was no Faulkner in it. You'd open it up and they were blank pages. It was a nothing book. There was nothing in it, but there was something in it because it's a book. And the pages are blank, or are they just all filled up already with white? So that's interesting, too. It is a book. It does have sort of information in it. And the pages are a dimension. That's information, and they're a color, and that's all information. The words are extra information or extramation or excremation or something like that. And there's a word for it. But this one allowed you to then write something in it. So I remember getting it, and I'm going to practice. First of all, I'm going to practice my Tolkien Elvish calligraphy. And, you know, Anna Medvi Magovanen. I would write it over and over and over again. Until I get it right. In my nothing book. But I couldn't have written that in my nothing book, these things that weren't my original thought that I just had were just coming through me and I was writing in someone else's idea. That wouldn't have that if I didn't have that empty space to express myself. Again, not with my own ideas. But I pray for that space. And I think I've already, I think I've gotten it. Oh my goodness. What if it already was that? This vast stage. Say, oh, hearty surprise. I have given you your own theater. Theater? Don't say theater. I never said theater coming up. I never heard anybody say it. Theater. Theater. I guess theater. It depends how you say it. Now I don't know how to say it anymore. I've talked myself out of so much. There's head injuries that can give you accents. I'm just going to put that out there. That could be what's going on. But what if I had given you your own theater, oh Hardy? Talking awful loud, Lord. Yes, I know. I thought you'd be a small interior voice. Inside voice. That's what I call my split personality.
Do it, do it.
Oh, stop it, inside voice. And then I say, outside voice is the Lord. And it's loud. My goodness, it sounds like rolling thunder. And I do hear messages in thunder sometimes. No, gosh, I wish that'd be all I have. If you were a little crazier, all your questions be answered. And that would be lovely. Yes, if you are sane, you are in for it. Or insane. Because you are headed into something that is going to be confusing for you. Let me try to explain it a little bit. Do you know how when they take somebody on the Star Trek and they put them in the holodeck, an imaginary place, and there are limitations to the imaginary world because it doesn't have to be fully real, right? It's just it's an illusion. And so things can be a little strange or seem incongruous or be illogical or seem sort of deficient. And we say, why is my imagination greater than reality? And that is because you are in this holodeck and things like that. And we have put ourselves into a holodeck where we believe that the things that we perceive are the world that we live in. And the imperceptible to us, though imperceived and imperceptible. Lord, are you there? Hello? I know I'm going on and on and on and on and on, but I thought my understanding was that you were able to be in more than one place than once, like Dr. Manhattan, and that I was getting 100% Dr. Manhattan, even though there were other ones doing other things. One of them's doing like a workdays thing, which is cute. So Dr. Manhattan is working every single day at a different place. One Mattress King, and then there's a place that serves ice cream and everything like that, getting to know people. There's a place that gives a certain kind of sandwich, and the people that work there are sarcastic. So he's doing that one, and he's being sarcastic with people. They love it. They come in, they get abuse. They go in and say, I want one of your special sandwiches, and they go, you're ugly failure. And they go, well, you don't know me. And then they start spouting like real specifics about your life. You know, you let down your mother, Gladys. What are you talking about? That's real. They get real personal because they've done some research. Also, they do cold readings. So they'll be eavesdropping on you in line. And then when you get up there, they know some things about you and it'll be in their earpiece. And they'll be really specifically abusive. And I don't like to go there except for the fries are so good. I get they put them in twice. So you do the fries, you put them back. That's the key to fries, is that twice crispy thing. I'll tell you, it's like nothing. You can fry something right up to the point where it almost doesn't exist. And somebody will still eat it. And I know that because of Rutt's Hut. So we know this, if you can take how much frying a hot dog can take. And they know. They know when the moisture's almost completely gone. And it's sort of ashen, but it's retaining its shape. I know that's how you feel. You feel, oh, I have been, I'm a cremator, or whatever the ones, the super crispy ones are. So it has been done to me. I feel it, oh, Lord, I cry out in my desperation. I know in my heart, I know there must be compassion and patience and love in the world, because I feel it in my heart. It must have been done to me. I must have sensed it. I must have passed it. I must have got a whiff of it. I must have gotten a whiff of kindness at some point, or I wouldn't even know what it is. And I wouldn't feel its absence if I didn't ever have love, or I wasn't ever loved. I wouldn't feel its absence so acutely. Oh, we, all of us, I think, have at some point, I hope, felt some modicum of love, a little piece, a little tiny little fragment of it, something. Oh, and some of us have experienced tiny little pieces, little crumbs of greater things. Oh, of joy, of true happiness, of fulfillment, of compassion, things like that. How did you get it? I don't know. I think I got it off of somebody. I was in line or something. You can get it. Like, there's bad things that you can catch off of waiting in line at Disney World with somebody. Like, you can get viruses that'll make you even poo yourself. I don't want to be crude, but there's viruses. You go, oh, no, what just happened? But there's other things that you can get from people in line, too, that are contagious. And they're inspiring. And inspire means to breathe into, right? And I have had just a whiff of real love or selflessness or compassion or some sort of transcendent understanding of our connectedness. There are some people that have really, really feel it, and sometimes they project it, and sometimes they do things to express that, and those are kindnesses, and you see them, and you feel transformed by it, because now that you've witnessed it, somebody doing something really nice in line at Disney World, now that you've seen it, it's in you too, and you hope for it and long for it. You say, look at that old lady fell down, and look at those people, the picture back up, not just that, some of them are so sensitive that they consoled the family that were with the old lady. Look at all the things they did. We went back and picked up all the things that had fallen to make sure she had all her possessions, and you see people caring for each other, and you go, what's that all about? What are these little things? And that's what they are. They're latent sometimes, just like viruses. Say, I know this was, I saw this done when I was a child, and now it's in my cells, it's in my nerve endings, like a virus. And so it remains there, and it's not always active, and it certainly isn't always active in others. And oh, the woe that can happen. To look in the eyes of someone that you once knew, and they don't remember you, and now maybe they're hostile to you. That can happen with aging. It can happen with if you're friends with somebody in elementary school, and then they go to a high school that's really messed up, and then after that it's all over. You're not friends anymore. Oh, I've seen that happen to children. It's no joke. I have seen and talked to young people, and this was years ago, I won't say what the context was. Let's say it's Sunday school or something. But I'm talking to these young people, and they're in high school, and they've got seemingly all these differences. And they say, yeah, we were all friends in elementary school. And I go, what happened? And they go, well, we grew up. And I go, I don't know, up maybe. But the grew part, I'm going to have to contradict you there, because if you have, if that ended, then something went wrong, I believe. And I would love to see you thinking about repairing that or have it not happen to your children. Oh, how do you do that? Oh, I'll just say you stand on the mountaintop alone. You're going to have to do a lot of solitary crying. Oh, in the wilderness, it's a lonely thing to be a human being. And when you're a child, it just seems like everybody else, you're all on the same page. You say, oh, they're all here. I think they're all here to help me. And it's just beautiful. You say, oh, look, they're all looking at me. Oh, look at the new baby. Boy, that wears off. And then you're discarded. And then you're just another what? Nothing. The fire hydrant of a person. You become one of the many telephone poles, power poles of a human being. That is something that we see but don't see. And we look past, and sometimes we just go up and we staple a flyer for a show. Well, that doesn't happen as much anymore. Instead of flyers for shows, then it's just, we buy homes. We buy diabetes strips. Or something like that. Just all positive stuff. Stapled to you, the human being that stands at these intersections like so much architectural goop. Are you a service station? Are you a vape shop?
I am. I'm overlooked and nothing and empty. Oh, Hardy.
What? Is that you, Lord?
No, I'm somebody else. I'm praying on a party line.
Oh, you're praying on a party line. We're praying together. We're going to put our prayers together.
I have mine in here too, Hardy.
Good. Come on, y'all sound like the same person, but come on, everybody, let's put them all together.
I got something to add.
Come on, what's your prayer?
I'm thinking about it.
All right, you get thinking, you get something together.
Is it things you want, like Christmas presents?
No, not really. It's going to be, I don't know, I just ramble on. I like to hear what's in my heart, because this whole thing, this living, it's an experiential situational. In that, it's really hard to get a grip on intellectually. You end up just kind of trying to sort out how you feel about things. And that's what I'm trying to get a handle on. And I'm trying to be wise about it, because I keep learning things. And the things I learn are helpful. And because they help me navigate that experience. Now that we are halfway through our prayer, I'm going to ask something of you, O Lord. I'm going to say I have a theory. I'm going to put it out there. God, excuse me. I'm going to get, as soon as I'm done talking to you, I'm going to get something to eat. We feel, us human beings, and I might be speaking for other creatures too. I don't know any crabs or anything. We make cartoons out of different animals, and we think we know them, but I don't think we do. Because I could say, you'd say, well, you know, I think you know the heart of a sponge or a sea star because of SpongeBob and everything. I don't think we do. I think that's just us projecting what we think their lives are like, but they're probably nothing like that, in my opinion. But I know that we all feel very helpless, very powerless. We feel like a driven leaf, like it's a leaf blown about on the wind, or a leaf on a water, on a great stream. I am a driven leaf. And you think, that makes me feel very lonely and helpless. I want to be the wind. I want to be the thing that drives the leaf. I want to be the water. I want to be the stream that carries the leaf. I want to be the boy that built the house, that ate the goat, that put the leaf in the stream that drives the heart of humans. And I have to understand that maybe by being the leaf, I am also the wind. And I'm also the water. And I'm also the house. And just identity-wise, it's a recursive nightmare. But it's all right. Oh, my goodness. The answer to my question is answered when I look in the mirror. And I think, well, what kind of answer is that? And I think it's very similar to when God said, and then said, well, you say, well, maybe it's in a book somewhere. A lot of people say that. Well, you don't hear the words. They just, he just said something once and was hoping everybody would write it down. It's very much like the Shakespeare things. What are they called? Begins with a Q. Where they, you know, Shakespeare didn't, I guess there's no scripts. Well, you can see if Billy Crystal's the only one who had that original Saturday Night Live script, nobody's going to have the Shakespeare ones. But what they had was the transcripts. Huh? So that's amazing. So somebody sat there and wrote down everything that they said in the Shakespeare play. And because there was also improvising, that was almost better than that. So then they did this again with My Dinner with Andre. They said, well, just write. I bet they put things in that are in the movie that are not in the script. I bet the transcript is different. So is that word, is your word transcript or script? Or I don't know what I'm reading. I don't know which one to read. The one I'm going to go with, I'm probably going to go of all holy books and the ones that I think contain all the words and thoughts of God, I'm probably going to go with Don Quixote. I thought long and hard about it, but I think that's the one. That seems to be the book where everything is a message. And I need messages. I need a message. A message in a bottle would be great because then it would be positive it wasn't for me. So then if it was asking me to do something, I could get out of it. Because I'd say, clearly, I found this. So I don't know if that counts. I mean, it's a draft notice, but I found it in a bottle. So, hands up in the air, it is not mine. I found it, if it was addressed to me, and something like that. But if I open it as a bottle, and it's a jury duty, or a summons, or draft notice or something like that. So I got a problem. I ask for a message. And if I receive it, I may reject it because I have an excuse and say, well, that is probably not for me. The prophet Jonah, I've spoken about this before, is the only prophet in the Bible who's successful and he's a big loser. You know? Because what happens is he warns people. He warns Nineveh. They go, oh my gosh, thank you for the warning. They do as he says, and they do not receive the wrath of God, making Jonah look kind of like a fool. Because, you see, if you're a prophet and you say, y'all need to change your ways or doom, and then there's doom, well, now, what good are you? Is that it? Is that your job, is just to warn and then skedaddle? What if your warning is so good people heed it? Then are you a failure? And so Jonah felt like an idiot. So, you know, he ran away from being a prophet because he knew, you know, oh great, I'm probably going to be good at it. And then what? Could you imagine that? You know that feeling? You say, what if I could speak to people? What if I was called to or had the opportunity? What if the Lord said to me, Hardy White, you get on this microphone? Yes. And this microphone is going to go out on a radio and you're going to reach souls everywhere by chance. Just happen to be listening. And you have an opportunity to say something. What would you say? I go, well, wait a minute. Well, what would you do? What would you say to them? Well, would you try to get them to do something? Well, like what, buy a certain kind of pie? My friend makes pies. I'd like him to buy those pies. And then maybe my friend and I could split the money. And then what would you do with the money? I'd buy influence. But you just had influence. Pie? See, I don't know. I don't know where to go with this. I feel like... So, let's say you're saying, I have an opportunity to speak to hearts. And what do I say? Well, I don't think I'd say anything in particular. I think that would be silly. I think it would be silly and strange to do anything but express what is truly in the human heart, which is utter confusion, which is terror, which is amusement and joy and forgetfulness. Oh, a blissful forgetfulness. How could I be so silly? I forget good things and bad things, and they pop back and recur to me spontaneously. I never know when. I live things and I relive them. So I think I'd say something like that. I'd say, "Hello, you. I don't know who you are, and you don't know who I am." And I will say this. There's going to be a lot of people out there that make you feel, maybe make you feel scared or frustrated, you know, when you have to see a lot of them in one place and in a crowd or something, or maybe it's a boss at work. You say, "This one person that could destroy my whole life. I got to care what they think 24 hours a day, because if they take away my livelihood, then I have nothing, and I live in constant fear, and I want to experience joy." And sometimes I do. Sometimes my favorite TV show is on, and I say, "Oh, I understand this. I recognize it. Well, what do I do about it? I don't know. All I can do is sit here and keep you company. All I can do is be here with you, because they didn't give me any." See, I'm locked in. Here's the crazy thing. I know I'm dressed this way. I'm locked in here, too, with you. I don't know. I'm very confused about it, and I don't know why. But bless you, I won't contribute to your misery. I don't want to. And that's one thing I think I won't do, is I won't add on to it. I imagine that you've all got enough to deal with. And so what I would like to do is maybe you could laugh at me. Or I just think it's educating to sometimes just say things about yourself if they're true. And even if they're not true, sometimes it helps people. If they feel like maybe they're not so unique. I feel like being an individual soul is often burdensome. And you feel that the most when you're grieving. And so the wise always say, that's how you got to be around a lot of people. There is something that happens in times of celebration and times of grief, that if you're with a lot of people, you become less and less of a solitary individual. You know, you're not as alone, and you say, well, gosh, I'm a people, not a person. You know, there's more to me. I'm over there too. We're all in this. It's not just my burden. It's other people. And I see them and I can make eye contact. And they know, say, I know what you're going through over there. I feel you. And it lightens your load a little bit. And that's why people, when they're equalized, like in lines at an amusement park or something, why they can do good. Because they've forgotten to compete. And they're alone in their joy there for a moment. And they forget themselves. You know, you think, oh, honey, maybe I should join a complainers club and we should all get together and moan or anything. Here's the best thing to do, because losing yourself feels the best. And I say get together and sing. And singing with others really helps you. You get there. You don't have to make up the things that come out of your mouth. You get to say things. They sound cool coming out of you. They sound even more cool in conjunction with what others are doing. And you start to at least feel, if not have an intellectual breakthrough, you have an emotional breakthrough in what it's like to be connected or what that means. And it's a liberating, wonderful thing. And you don't have to ever be fully liberated 100% of the time. You can do things to get out of yourself. It's nice to just have a break. So get me out of prison. What if I got you furloughs, occasional furloughs, and you weren't in prison all the time? Would that be all right? Yeah. Could we take field trips? We take field trips. And we get outside of that and get outside of ourselves for a while. Ooh. Oh, Lord, help me. Guide me now to do this. I'm going to do this exercise. I'll get outside of myself. How do you do that? Is that you? No. Okay. Listen, I'll get outside of myself sometimes by just having a little fun. And I want to do something with you called swinging the alphabet. Boot da doot 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 B A bay B E B B I bicky bye B O bo bicky bye bo B U boo bicky bye bo boo boom boom ba doo boop boop C A say C E C C I sicky sigh C O so sicky sigh so C U soo sicky sigh so soo. Now you're thinking, hey, I heard the Three Stooges do that one time. What a cute little novelty song. I would submit to you that I ran into that technique in an exploration of Jewish mysticism one time, looking for ancient meditative techniques, and found them. And I think it was in a Gershom Scholem book. It wasn't describing these techniques, and what the technique was taking the letters of the name, of the four-letter name of God, should you say it? I was a Yud Heh Vav Heh, and putting them against vowel sounds. Isn't that interesting? And then doing permutations that way. And it taxes your brain. It's like playing paradiddles or something. And then when that happens, you know, when you do a mental exercise that takes that degree of concentration, where you'll be liberated from some thinking, you know, you'll lose a little bit of yourself. You'll pop out. And it's a meditation technique. People use it all sorts of, say all sorts of mantras and things like that. And so now I'd say baby bumper, bumper bumpers, or something like that. Dozy doats and mares, doats and little lambs, you dive, he's a kiddly dive, do something like that, you know, something serious. And it's transformative. And there you go. Now you can, oh, I wish you had a church. I do too, because I would love to have to be worrying about a space and whether the air conditioner's working all the time. No, I have. So when those, this is a sort of ministry is a strange word, because I think it originally was a band, but it means a lot of different things. And, you know, people have had them on radio and television for a long time, and they usually have it's a specific religion or something like that. You can't just have one that's not religious or hooked up to a specific one. So what are you ministering to? But I would submit to you this. It's a form. I made it up myself, and I've got little check boxes and everything. It looks official, doesn't it? And I say, I have this form, and you need to let me have my broadcast ministry of what message are you spreading? I'm not. That's what should be so great. I'm just spreading. I don't even have to spread anything particular. I mean, listen, you know, let's say you're a mime, and you're out there, and you're pretending to paint. Do you need a permit to paint? I mean, maybe for performance, but not to paint, because you're pretending to paint. So that's what I say about this. It's not, we're going through the motions. It's the puppetry of the soul. That's what we're doing. We're moving things around and making them seem like they're alive. We're motivating ourselves. We're having play. We are expanding ourselves. We're not being trapped. We're escaping from our prisons, not by leaving them, by making the interiors of them infinite and pushing the walls so far away from us that they're confining properties are moot. Just the same way with the boundaries of the universe. I don't feel in any way confined by them. You know, if the Truman story, if that space was a little bit bigger, and you know, the really, if you go to the really watercolor or whatever is actually in Florida that's patterned after that, you can't get to the horizon in a boat. You will sink. So it's just the same. If you can't get to it, if you can't get to the walls, they're not walls. I want you to don't bow your head because you could be driving. I just thought of that. Oh, Lord, don't bow. Do the opposite. Look your nose down at despair. Look down your nose at it. My mother, bless her heart, is still living at the advanced age of, I don't remember now, but I remember when her birthday is, and we have get a cake. But we're on one of the higher numbers. So she has she wears a reading glass. I mean, obviously wears reading glasses, but has to kind of look, or bifocals, and looks down her, has to look down her nose. So when she looks at anything, she winces and like that, winces and has a kind of a beaver, her nose scrunches up. So whenever she's looking at anything these days, it looks like it smells bad to her. And well, my mother's a very gentle, accepting person. It looks like everything that she is reading is inspiring disdain. Every picture on every cell phone, every menu. And so I say to you, make a face, pull a face, and take that face and aim the face in the direction of your despair and concentrate on it and make it think that that you're thinking bad thoughts, but you're not wasting any energy. You're just staring at it. You're looking down your nose at it. I'm developing postures that amuse, entertain, and stimulate me. And we can do that for one another. Oh, I am the king of an invisible kingdom of nothing. Dum, dum, dum. I'm the king, and I'm the joker too. I like to rib myself. I like to make fun of my decisions and my face. And then I'll have me executed. Not me, I mean the jester. Because I can always get a new one. And that's a thing too. So I retain that, my royal dignity. And I love it. I love being a king in a situation where the traditional vestments aren't stupid, because a lot of them are, you know? There's so many where you just look like a matron. I'm not saying anything bad about the United Kingdom's king, but when they dress him up, it looks like a matron in a Marx Brothers comedy. What's with the ermine collar? Really? I mean, I don't think it's flattering. And I like that modern, just this, and mostly it's a suit and tie, but they got these, you know, we got these costumes. And I've been like that, like local theater or theater departments at colleges are like that, you know. It's like, you know, we got this Prospero robe, and you might as well wear it for something. Because if you got the costume, so I'm saying that to you. I'm saying I have this radio program. This opportunity is what it is. This appointment with you. We get together like elderly people that got nothing to do, and so they meet at the coffee shop in the morning and they complain and they drink coffee. And then one by one they perish. Sometimes they go to the mall and do it. I've seen them do it at the mall. That's us. But we're not perishing anytime soon. This is taking much longer than any of us thought it would. And we are getting to entertain one another. And that is so beautiful. Nobody can touch that. There are the secret lives of peasants that we have that are wonderful, where you have joy and that kind of baffles the baffles the negative, baffles the powerful, baffles the evil kings. They say, why are these people enjoying themselves? I feel no such joy. Why are they laughing?
Oh, sire, because they're, I don't know, I
took everything from them. And that might be, this might be Grinch Who Stole Christmas. But that's, you know, why aren't they happy?
Well, you didn't take their drugs.
Oh, I meant to take their drugs.
Yes, you left their drugs.
Well, that's why the Whos are all, because I know I took the roast beast.
So I don't know if that, am I misremembering? I probably am. Oh my goodness. Where you want to hide your joy? I hide mine, well, you know, not literally up in you, but like in your Houdini lockbox. That's what I call it. I need to go get my, I keep forgetting to make, gotta make a, make your colonoscopy appointment, folks. Forgot to make mine. I gotta make mine. That reminded me. Get that Houdini lockbox checked out. And what was his real name? Eric Weiss or something like that? Was it Eric Weiss's safe? Or I don't know what to call it. There's all sorts of euphemisms for the human buttage. And he's just famous because he put the most keys in his. But there you go. In his butt. That was B-U-T, I said, with an ellipsis. But it sounded like the other kind. Oh, you don't know on radio? There's a beautiful absurdity to it. I don't know who this person is speaking to me. I doubt their sanity. I don't know whether it's an act or they're a sincere person. Should I pay any attention to it? Am I being made a fool of? Is it a Shaggy Dog story? Is it going to be some kind of meandering tale that goes on and on, doesn't get anywhere? I'm being mocked for my willingness to pay attention? No, never. I swear to you, never. I'm always trying to make a connection with you. I want you to feel awake and alive. I want you to feel access to the joy and to the strangeness and to the terrifying wonder of being alive, the agonizing ecstasy of finding yourself a creature made of neurons and nerves, a feeling being. It's crazy. And it hurts, and it feels good at the same time. And I'm so blessed that I know you, my friend. And this is a short time we have together. And if you're having a good time, you'll realize that it's very short. If you're having a terrible time, you go, well, this seems like a long time. You go, well, what better to kill the time than a little frivolity? And I hope I bring that to you, and that you appreciate that.
Are you still Bragg?
I am. Oh, for now and ever, world without end. Amen. Amen. Amen, everybody. Yeah, what are you going to sing now, Hardy? Going to sing that you are the one. I got nothing. I thought it'd be closing number. If I could plan and have a closing number like that, that's exactly where it would have gone. Oh, bless you. You mean the world to me. And I hope that I have lifted your heart up or done something to it, dusted it off. I'll be here every week with you. You need to see me every week?
I think I'm going to need to see you every week, Dr. Hardy.
I love you. I don't mind.
Oh, thank you.
You just want to cry sometimes?
Or bowl or go bowling.
Okay. Just have a good cry.
Or, well, I mean, it's, or have fun.
Oh, have fun. We don't have to cry. We don't have to cry. Just have fun. I love you so much. You are listening to Miracle Nutrition with Hardy White on WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope, 91.9 in Rockland County and New York City, New York. And online, worldwide, WFMU.org. Freeform Radio on the Freeform. Coming up, Mahogany. Bless y'all.
Twins' name was Ebony. Her name was Mahogany. 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 Twins' name was Ebony.
Mm-hmm.